Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. So glad you guys are all here tonight. You'll have to forgive me. Yesterday I got up with kind of congestion and a sore throat, and I thought that it's been really windy, and there was a huge fire in an industrial area that released a lot of chemicals in the air, and the pollen count is really up. So I'm hoping it's that. I've managed to avoid the more obvious, excuse me, these days, but I've got a little bit more of a frog than I thought. But I hope that you guys are enjoying late spring. And what, June 1st, a lot of cool things. Summer is on the way, but it's also Marilyn Monroe's birthday. Now, no doubt you've heard of Marilyn Monroe. She was a Hollywood glamour girl and mega movie star. She will forever be tied to President John F. Kennedy and known all over the world for her infamous Happy Birthday, Mr. President tribute. She's also responsible for all us girls believing that diamonds are a girl's best friend. But do you know she was so much more than that? Marilyn was a strong and resilient human being. She overcame the odds and kept seeking treatment through her own personal growth, even though the outcome ended in the star's short life at 36 years old. How Marilyn Monroe's legacy helps us with mental illness and addiction 60 years later, on the anniversary of her death, also coming up. Tonight, I have as my guest, Nina Boski, pardon me, to discuss all the things Marilyn and her life from tragedy to triumph. Nina is also producing two special projects to commemorate this anniversary. Nina Boski is a transformational leader, media executive, and founder of Life Bites Global. You can find out more about her at her website, lifebitesglobal.com. And if you're driving or in your recliner and not by a pen, I always put the relevant website inside my program notes, and they're posted in about 40 places across social media, as they are every week. And assumedly you're listening from one of those links now. If it gets pushed down too far, you can always find any of my shows at my website in a flash or at braininjuryradio.com in the on-demand section. But with that, I am going to welcome Nina Boski.
Welcome. Hi there.
Nina. Thanks so much for being on the show tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm excited about it because we really, and I forgot to do something I need to step back and do real quick, but before I do that, I just want to say to the audience that we booked this show a long time ago. I was booked out like, I don't know, three or four months. And an opening came up, and it happened to be today, June 1st, and is karma, kismet, the universe would have it. It just, I shot to the agent of that I happened to have an opening June 1st, and they got a hold of Nina, and by gosh, it happened to be Marilyn Monroe's birthday. And
there you go.
I believe in divine intervention, don't always understand why, but I think that's just incredible that months ahead of time, that happened to be the date with Nina, you know, talking to her about being a guest. And so, you know, happy birthday to Marilyn Monroe. She truly, truly was and is an icon. In fact, I don't have the amount with me. Maybe you know it, or I'll look it up later when we're talking. But even all these years later, an Andy Warhol print of her just sold at auction for, like, I don't know what the amount was.
$195 million.
Thank you. I knew that it was one of the largest sums ever gotten for a piece of artwork, ranked right up there with it. So the interest in Marilyn in all these years has never waned. So for someone to, you know, that started out the way she did, and we'll talk about that, you know, from Norma Jean to all this time later, she didn't get lost in the generations like so many people do. She's as much of an icon today as she was back in the height of her popularity. But one thing that keeps people alive is the memories and the interest, like people like you, you know, that keep her story and her memory alive. And we're going to be talking about some things tonight that were very relevant and pivotal in the way her life played out, and celebrities and regular civilians alike ever since that time. But before we start, I'm going to back up for just a moment, like I hadn't unmuted Nina yet. For those of you who are new around here, I'm shocked at my frog throat. So Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. And with that, I'm going to flip back to, this is as relevant, my leader piece in the show tonight as it is every week, because whether it's brain injury, whether it's substance abuse. I was just telling Nina last week, the show we did with the NFL players, and gee, we've just been watching a trial with Johnny Depp, and I can go back to my teenage years, you know, Janis Joplin, the guy from The Doors who was so cute. What was his name? You get that on Brain Injury Radio, Nina. We forget a lot. in any case, regular people go through this every day. But one of the things that helps bring it to light is the process of celebrity. And, you know, celebrities are people just like we are sitting here, but they have certain pressures played out in the public eye, and we've watched so many self-destruct. And on one hand, you think about it, gee, this person had everything I would have ever thought would have made me happy, the celebrity, the trappings mm-hmm. that go with it, all of the rest, you know, how could someone in this position possibly need to self-medicate and go through the unfortunate, you know, you think of Whitney Houston or and on and on and on over the years, self-destruct. And well, I think Elton John sang it about Marilyn, right? Have their candle burned out long mm-hmm. before their time. And yeah. Marilyn is a great example of that, because some of the names that I talked about earlier, I'm sure there's a lot of people now in generation, whatever it is right now, that don't know those names, you know, mm-hmm. that don't know Jimi yeah. Hendrix or Janis Joplin or any of those, but I'll bet they remember Marilyn. So she's just been a timeless icon, and I'm just really honored to have you on tonight to talk about it and for it to be her birthday. So
I know. What a treat.
It's really incredible. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you first, Nina, and how you got interested in Marilyn and then in turn in doing a project on her. We'll talk more toward the end about specifically what's coming up, those projects that you're going to have, but the sure. interest and all the study that you've done in delving into Marilyn's life.
Well, thank you for having me. One thing I want to say is that, you know, compared to some of the Marilyn experts that are out there that have been researching her life, probably some of them 20, 30 years, I didn't have that going into getting to know Marilyn. I kind of fell into the Marilyn world by I was doing a radio show myself and used to have, I'm sure like you do, have all these people, and they go ahead and they, you know, send books and all this stuff. And I had a client say to me, would you mind reading this Marilyn Monroe book? He wants to get it out into the media. And I said, sure. So I read it and I thought, well, God, this reads like a movie. So when I went back and talked to him, he said, well, there is a movie. And he said it was optioned by HBO, but they decided to go with the biopic. And this is a feature film, thriller noir, not at all around Marilyn Monroe's biography life. It's more about she's the backdrop of the film. But it really got me thinking about what happened to her. And so in this film, I brought a lot of people together, and within 6 months we had a deal, and everybody was telling me that financial, you know, getting a movie finance is really difficult. And I was like, wow, we got two offers in 6 months. This is not that difficult. Well, it was, and we ended up falling out of escrow and had to start all over. And so I said, well, let's get back on the radio, because my company is Life Bites Media, or Global Media. And I am a life and business and energy coach on one hand of my business, and then the other part of it is media and entertainment, because I've been in radio and television since I was 17 years old, so it's a long time. And so I've now moved into more transformational. When I say transformational, it has to have a meaning to it. And so doing an entertainment thriller noir was kind of going backwards in my opinion. And I still didn't really have this love for Marilyn till I got back on the radio and started talking about the investigation as it relates to Marilyn's death. And she started to grow on you, and she does. And she's got a big, big life personality on the earthly plane and spirit. She certainly has a big, big spirit, let's just say. And she grabs you. She's magical, and she's you know, there's so many facets to her that makes her very dynamic and even fascinating, and you try to put her in a box and you can't. So, but one of the things that
right.
happened in me, doing this investigation is I went in with a preconceived notion. Of course she was murdered. Of course that's what happened to her. And I believed all of everything that I had ever read or seen as it relates to Marilyn Monroe. And then I started to go, wow, wait a minute, this isn't true. You mean this isn't true? This isn't true. And so to make a long story short, we compiled a 22 expert team. And so it's compiled of the most credible Marilyn experts. It also has mental health, addiction, law enforcement. And so we started the investigation into Marilyn. And then the last podcast that we just did is a dramatic podcast into Marilyn. So there's a lot of stuff going on with Marilyn, but I would say this to your audience, the truth sometimes is more fascinating than the rumors that are out there. So
I was going to say, can we talk about for just a moment, because when you said what you just said, I know that I've caught a couple pieces over the years, and, you know, one was that the Kennedys somehow did it because of the chatter. There was rumors of not only John and, you know, the notorious happy birthday, Mr. President, but she seemed to be pretty chummy with Bobby too. And then in another docudrama, something that I saw over the years, maybe an article I read, it talked about maybe some connection with the mob or Sinatra and or the mob. And so there's been so many conspiracy theories over the years, and that's what you're alluding to. But for people that don't know or have maybe just seen one of those and taken it for the gospel, there have been many over the years. That's why this is really impressive, the team that you put together to be able to do this research and hopefully come up with the truth, because there's been so much speculation over the years. And, you know, I've also heard suicide and on and on. So, you know, the over the backyard fence and what people think or what they've heard over the years, it's kind of been a mystery. So when we look at this being her birthday and coming up on the 60 year anniversary of her death, there has never been a complete crystal clarity that yes, mystery solved, and maybe this is it, but mystery solved. There's always been speculation floating around her story.
Yeah, and, you know, it's hard because there's holes in the story. And so I think the thing that we're doing, and we're starting a special investigation series, because over the last couple of years, there's been a couple of books that have come out. There's a documentary that's currently out on Netflix that has a lot of rumor and unfortunately not based in fact. And a lot of the, and I'm going to say this for the people that may be listening, the Netflix documentary is filled with innuendo, but not a lot of facts that have already been actually being debunked. And unfortunately, now we're having to go back because it's such a big media platform to go back and actually tell people. And one of the things that I'm committed to doing in this new podcast, and we started it when we started the investigation, if you think about how media is portrayed in the world today, there's a lot of commentary. So you got a little bit of fact, you got a lot of commentary, maybe even some probable theory, and then you got a lot of rumors. And so that's even how we digest our news. So when you think of the Marilyn story, 6 decades, you've got 6 decades of a lot of rumor, a lot of made-up stories. And they are now in our cultural fabric as truth. I'm a definite example of that, given the fact that you weren't going to convince me otherwise. And I've had other people say, Nina, I don't care. I believe it was the Kennedys. I believe it was the mob. Whatever it is that they believe. And, and you know, beliefs are hard once you think of them as fact. But one of the things that we're really committed to doing in this new podcast is breaking down for the audience what is a fact so you know, what is a probable theory so you can put it in that bucket, and what is an outlandish rumor. And so when you know it from that kind of vision and those filters, then you can then digest what you think is true and what isn't. But when people write books, when people do documentaries, and they put them all in one, it is perceived as it's a fact when in actuality it's not. And I'm going to even give you a really hard truth, and this is really going to be hard for the audience to digest. Back in 2017, we did there was two networks, major networks, that did one-hour biographies on Marilyn. One of them, there was, when 1 hour, was 42 errors.
Wow.
In the second network that aired, a one-hour show, 81 errors. And the reason being is if you start with a rumor and you then connect the dots as if you're telling a story, then the story that you're telling is based on rumor. So the facts are now distorted. And I want people to start waking up to this, because this isn't just in Marilyn's story. This is in the media today. We're being told these things as if they're fact, when in reality, they're either a probable theory or an outlandish rumor, but we're being told with an authoritative style that this is happening. And most of us don't have time to check the facts. And when you start to really check the facts, and we're very, very detailed on our facts, and we'll tell you if we're just coming up with a theory right now. We don't know what the truth is. At least you know that's what we're telling you. But I think that's where the audience, particularly in the Marilyn story, has to wake up to, just like I did, whoa, wait a minute here. This is really blowing my mind, because what I thought was true is actually just outlandish rumor. And it is really outlandish rumor, some of these things that have been on fact. And I'll give you an example if you want me to. Do you want me to tell you a couple of examples so that the audience knows what I'm talking about?
I do. Absolutely.
Okay. So there is a guy named Robert Slatzer back in the day, early 1980s, who told the press that he was married to Marilyn Monroe. So you've got to think about this. He had a picture with her. He had a forged marriage license that wasn't real. And what he did is he went around talking about Marilyn as if he knew her. He had read so much about her. Now, I don't always throw the baby out with the bathwater, in the sense that Robert Slatzer was also responsible for the opening of the DA for them to then investigate Marilyn Monroe's death back in the 1980s. So for him, I will give him that. But the reality is, the picture that he has was on the set of Niagara. He would probably be known as a stalker today. He never was married to her. And yet, multiple documentaries quote him, not only in books, but actually on television. And it's a lie. We can prove it. The other thing is that Marilyn Monroe's housekeeper was washing the sheets in the middle of the night. Come to find out, Marilyn Monroe didn't have a washer and dryer at all. So how could you be washing the sheets in the middle of the night trying to cover up evidence?
No kidding.
Those are the things that we're talking about. So when you start looking at the things that aren't true, then you really start to go, well, if this isn't true, then what else isn't true? And you start unfolding and unfolding and unfolding. So there's a lot to be uncovered here. But I understand also with the mystery of her death, and, you know, there wasn't just a plain A plus B equals C. There's lots of room for conspiracy theorists and a lot of conspiracies. But we will tell you where the facts are and where they're not, and where the blank areas are, and where there are holes. And we may never know. And those are the realities of it. There's probably one or two people, particularly one person who is alive today, who knows, but she will never talk. So there you go. It might still be a mystery, but at least we can verify for the audience what is true. And I think, I don't know about you, but I'm at a place where it's like, I'd rather know the truth. There's so many things being told out in the media, not just with Marilyn Monroe, but everybody else, that you just kind of go, okay, just give it to me straight. What actually did happen?
Well, yeah, I would hate to have that person go to their grave without sharing what is the point. I mean, there is something to be said about that. But as you say, the truth, after all this time, you know, there's lessons in the truth. And so I hope that person talks. But I did want to mention that website too. I did give your Life Bites website, but
behindtheicon.com. Behindtheicon.com is a great site to go to. We're starting the special investigation this Friday, but they can listen to the dramatic episodes, which are really wonderful about Marilyn's life. And we have, it's actually an acting episode, Marilyn's the Companion podcast, where we even tell you in episode 9 the real deal around Happy Birthday, Mr. President. So most people don't realize that's a very well-rehearsed scene of the late, late Marilyn Monroe. It was all planned, and most people don't know that.
And how many of these podcasts are there?
So we have 9 episodes in season 1 of our dramatic podcast and 9 of the companion, and there'll probably be around 36 to 40 in the special investigation, just because there's so much content there. And then we'll go on to the rest of the dramatic podcast. But because it's their 60th and because there's a lot of things to debunk once again, we'll be back trying to tell the real Marilyn Monroe story versus, you know, I mean, if you think about it, what sells? Sex, politics, money, power, fame, murder, etc. And so we want to put those on to stories because they're sensationalized. And just because they're sensationalized doesn't necessarily mean that they're the truth. And I think for all of us, we've been following stories that are much more sensationalized in the media over the years. And now the real question is do people really want to know the truth, or do they just want to know a good story? You know, it makes for good fiction, but not necessarily fact.
Right. Yeah, that's understood. It's just depending on, maybe not, but in my case, depending on how old you are.
Yeah.
I would really like to know the truth because I've lived through all the speculation, you know, and
yeah.
I also said to Nina before the show that it's, you know, since her first, you know, there's snapshots that people see, and one is where she's standing over the vent with her white dress, you know, bending over, and it blows her skirt up.
Yeah.
You know, that's a snapshot. I think Warhol's picture is a snapshot, and, you know, the Joe DiMaggio part of it and bringing flower to her grave every year, you know, that's just a heart wrencher, you know, how much he loved her all those years. And it always makes me sad that that wasn't able to work out, because you think of someone, you know, after the fact, obviously you couldn't know it, although in depictions we've seen, we get the idea that he was truly in love with her, but then, and she would never know how long he went nearly to the end of his life, you know, with devotion toward her. And you think about the idea of love and imagining someone loving you that much, you know. That they would be that devoted, you know, with all their heart all those years, and off of Joe and just to fans and people that were around, you know, back at the beginning when she was alive and when she was performing. And, you know, some people were cruel, you know, about what they said. I think, you know, those old adages about dumb blonde and things like that would sometimes be attributed, but she really did prove herself in a lot of ways against some really bad odds, you know, and not always the best of press. A lot of people loved her, but like with anybody who is an icon, there's going to be people that, whatever, are jealous, envious, just have an attitude issue that they're going to look to poke holes, you know.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. And I think, you know, the reality is to Kim is that, you know, Marilyn, most people don't know this about her, but she was, I mean, I just did a talk on empowerment and purpose and used Marilyn's life. You know, she accomplished more in 36 years than some people do in 96 years, right? And when you think
yes.
about her mental illness and her addiction and her turmoil within her, and her, just look at what she was able to visualize and to create from really fragmented beginnings. And then you look at, you know, what attracts people to her. It's not, yeah, she's a glamorous movie star, and yes, she's, you know, she's really pretty, and she's got the beauty, and she's, we're dealing with her death, which deals with mystery and all that, and all of that's alluring. But when you really talk to a true Marilyn fan, what really brings them, you know, kind of to really melt their hearts isn't all of that. It's actually her ability to be vulnerable, to be real, and to be
yes.
childlike. And I think mm-hmm. that right now in the world, we're needing that. We're needing the ability to be real. You know, if you look at the core of Marilyn Monroe, she was just like all of us who wanted to be loved, to belong, to be accepted. And that's what she was really yearning for. Yeah, she wanted to be a great actress, but at her core, she was a simple girl with a simple dream, and it magnified throughout not only her own lifetime, but here we are 60 years later. And how many of us actually have people talking about us 60 years later in the media like we do? There's not a lot of celebrities from years gone by, and there's not a lot of famous people, whether they're politicians or somebody else, that we're still talking about, and yet we're still talking about Marilyn Monroe.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to step back and we'll go over these, but somebody just sent me a note. I sent them the website, and a couple people have been firing questions. I'm going to put my phone away. They're going to have to listen to the interview. She said, debunk this one or not. And still seems unsolved by everything I've read. Like they took her by ambulance to the hospital and she actually died en route. So they took her back and put her in the bed where they found her.
Yeah, that's unfortunately a very made-up rumor, and it was in the Netflix documentary from Anthony Summers as well as his Goddess book. So if you go back to the DA report, you will see those people that the two ambulance drivers were interviewed, and you'll also hear it in our upcoming episode where we'll talk about the ambulance driver theory and why that's not true and it's been debunked. Unfortunately, what happens in these stories is that years later you find out the real story, and you know, when people are thinking that there's either fame or they're 15 seconds of the spotlight, they come out with these stories. And, you know, what we do know from Marilyn's story, and this is really the truth, she died over time and she didn't die instantly. And so when you start to look at her autopsy report and you start to look at how she died with a combination of Nebutol and chloral hydrate, there was very little in her stomach. She didn't eat that day. She was not drinking that day. Most people say she was drinking and taking pills. She wasn't. But as any addict, what they'll do, and particularly Marilyn, she was not new to this. She would take some pills, and then all of a sudden, so if you think about it, you're taking more pills and you're combining chloral hydrate and Nebutol. If anybody should be on the hook, it should be those two doctors. Those two doctors knew what she was being given and yet allowed her to take those pills on her own. Chloral hydrate is the actual medication that killed Michael Jackson. So they're lethal. And I'm not going to blame them because that was 1962. The standards are very different. But the reality is even after talking to psychiatrists today, even back in 1962, those two should have known better, and they were not taking proper care of her. They were distracted. They were into their own lives, and they were doing things beyond what would be professional, not only in today's standards, but even back in 1962. I'll give you an example.
I agree. Yeah. Please.
Ralph Greenson, her psychiatrist, would, you know, and this is enabling the addict, right? So what he would do is he would give her the pills. He would take a bunch of them, put them in his hand in his pocket, and give her the pill bottle. So he's taking out the bottle of pills out of the bottle, putting them in his pocket, but still giving them to her. So she wouldn't have as many, but she still would have them. Now, that's the doctor doing that. So it's not very different than some of the
felony
celebrity doctors today. Yeah,
right.
Not back in 1962.
Right.
You know, but today, that is, you know, you were enabling her. And I'm not saying that he didn't want to try to help her. I think he really did. I think his intentions were to help her. But, you know, I can't speak for celebrity doctors today, but I think what's hard for them to do is have the tough love, because the tough love is they will go somewhere else and you're not going to be in the spotlight and you're not going to be the famous doctor anymore. And, you know, that's a very big thing to do with people. And he treated other people besides Marilyn Monroe. So, you know, back then they had very different standards. So I don't want to put them to the standards of today. But I would say that those two, for different reasons, had a very big role in her death, even though they might not have actually killed her, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It just, to me, it goes a long way. I mean, a person shouldn't need to be propped up in that way with those amounts to be able to do their job. You know, people do get depression and anxiety, and, you know, even now I've said this a lot of times on our show, and you know, a lot of the people listening here tonight have had brain injuries, TBIs from various types of things, some of them from substance abuse, some car accidents, domestic abuse, stroke, whatever it might be. And when the world gets turned upside down, our society, one of the complaints I have, and I don't want to politicize it, but I do, I guess, you know, is the less time there is to put in our health care, and we were doing this before, this has gone on a long time, where my opinion has been that we're one of the most overprescribed countries in the world. There's a pill for everything. And as our time is getting cut down, you know, you got 15 minutes to see your doctor, you know. I have to encourage everyone here, because a lot of us have a tendency to have our short-term memory impaired, to write down, you know, our top 10 questions we'd like to know from our doctor, and look at him again after we do it, and find the top five and put those first in the event that you run out of time, and actually write it down to be organized for a doctor's appointment, and comment for those old enough to remember that Dr. Welby left the scene a long time ago, you know.
Yes.
So that bedside
manner. We're updating
manner
ourselves
and,
there, Kim. If people know who we're talking about, I know exactly who you're talking about.
I know. Yeah, it's not Marilyn Monroe, but some of us even remember Dr. Welby. It was a whole different kind of healthcare than any young people right now will ever know. You know, doctors took time, they developed relationships, and pills weren't the first line of defense all the time. And, you know, one of the things I've noticed, and now we're going all the way back and talking about Marilyn, but it happens today, is that, you know, a doctor is not a pharmacologist. You know, they've taken a course in it. Hopefully that was one of the courses. I haven't been to medical school, where they would have at least gotten pharmacology 101, but, you know, really, the pharmacist is the one who studies that. And the thing is, any of those drugs, when they've gone through clinical trials, that was based on a person just using that drug. There's no way in a clinical trial, and I've made the comment before that, and I'm not saying that some people don't need medication. They do. I'll say that again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that we're overprescribed. The first time you open your palm for one pill, they tend to start multiplying. And then you're in some dangerous territory because doctors are taking the word of drug salespeople. And the drugs in the clinical trials have not been tested for every interaction with every other drug they're being taken with. And so...
Oh, very much so.
You know, the outcome that you would expect to have with a given drug that you get prescribed can be tainted by whatever other drugs you might be taking and can be very dangerous. So I tell people to talk to your pharmacist, you know, about the drugs you're taking because they're real busy too, you know, and especially since COVID, but that is their forte. And so, you know, discussing that with a pharmacist, the medications that you're on, because you can read the paper. You know, first of all, I don't really know anybody that reads the paperwork that they stick prescriptions. You know, I just don't. They go with a complaint to their doctor. The doctor says this drug will work. They start taking that drug. Some read the paperwork. Most do not. And then there's other, like I said, other prescriptions. And so you really have a mishmash of stuff going on there. And cautionary tale, that was going on, you know, back with Marilyn and had a couple different doctors. And that's dangerous, too, because somebody has to know everything that you're taking that couldn't coordinate the care. Today, it's not legal to what they call shop doctors. And people will do that, particularly when they become addicted to something. A doctor realizes it, and now that it's become, nobody thought anything of it, you know, when they were prescribing opioids and so forth. But then when there got to be such a problem and the addiction blew up and the bodies blew up, the amount of people dying of overdoses, then they went the other way and just stopped, which left a lot of people in a bad place that weren't abusing it. You know, they were maybe taking a pain medication and had real live pain, weren't addicted, or abusing. And the doctors got so freaked out, they just quit prescribing it, you know, and kind of left these people out to hang. And, you know, then people would go other places to try to get their medication and really put them in a bad place. And so, you know, Marilyn's story, she was trusting, and that's back when Marcus Welby type doctors were supposed to be around. And you know, my grandmother's
and
generation, where they...
Yeah, and she wasn't also the only one. Yeah, and she wasn't the only one. You've got, you know, Judy Garland and all of, you know, they would lace B12 with barbiturates. I mean, part of it was the sign of the times back then. Everybody went to martini lunches. It wasn't out of the ordinary. What we would call an alcoholic today was not, that was just doing what you do. You go to have a few martinis at lunch and you just keep drinking, but that's not being an alcoholic. So there's a lot of changes that have happened. But, you know, the thing that I think is really challenging that we have to look at is that back then there wasn't the right resources. Today we have so many resources, and why are we at epidemic proportions? There's a systemic issue that we're dealing with. It's not just change this and everything will be fine. Take away the guns and everything will be fine. It's
right.
Not, you know, with the shooting in Texas. There's a lot of things that affect each other, and they're more fundamental to who we are versus we want to blame something. It's because of this. And part of it is that we're not really listening to each other. We've become a culture of posting pictures and this is who I am and very external instead of really taking a beat and let's start really listening to each other with more of a compassion versus, you know, you're wrong, I'm right, let's divide. I think we need people. Let's go back to the simplicity of who Marilyn Monroe was. If you want to use her life for good. She's a simple girl with a simple dream, and she just wanted to be loved like 99% of us out in the world. We might have different views. We might have different opinions, but at our core of who we are, we want to love ourselves. We want to love the people, our families, our children, and yet we've gotten so far away from that, and I'd love this, her legacy, to be more than who killed Marilyn Monroe, because she was so much more than that.
Oh, me too. And the lessons that are in that for everybody now, you know, if they were listening back then, because, you know, that we talk about the coaches and others. You know, authentic is a word that's getting tossed around a lot now, you know, and it took a lot of not authentic people for people to know the difference, I guess. I'm not sure. But I think Marilyn, even though she was an actress, was always authentic in that vulnerability, even when she was acting as a person. I didn't see her able to cover that up, and she teased and had fun, but didn't appear to me, you know, to be so ego driven. It appeared to me she still, in spite of everything, it appeared to all of us that she had going, still had some insecurities driving her that didn't lend themselves to being an ego-driven person. That's just my opinion, you know, my observation of watching. And so a lot of things can happen. In fact, why don't we start for a moment? I'm going to flip back to some actual questions. I think you have answered what makes the series different from what's already been portrayed by talking about your team that you've put together. If there's more you want to add to that, do.
One other thing I do want to add to that, because we have a great Marilyn expert biographer who's probably been studying her close to 30 years and has written Icon, the Lifetimes and Films of Marilyn Monroe. He's been a panel expert of mine, as well as he is the basis of this dramatic podcast. But he's also a mental health professional. And during the month of May, during Mental Health Awareness Month, Gary and I really broke down Marilyn's diagnosis of borderline personality and bipolar disorder, as well as, you know, her anxiety that she had in extreme mixed episodes where they get very high and then very low and dark. And that explains a lot of being really happy one moment and really dark the next. But I think one of the things that we're doing is we're really shedding light between the correlation between mental health and addiction and how much that really plays a part in it, particularly in acute mental health issues.
Yes, absolutely. And so, great. That it's interesting about the people that you have on the team. You know, you mentioned the 22 experts, but it's nice to have a little backstory on some of these people, like what you just did. That person had been studying a long time and then had the health, the background in mental health.
Yeah. So it's, he's coming from a mental health perspective, but being a transformational coach, you know, I am helping people transform their lives and, you know, really taking people on a journey to allow them to be their best selves. And if you think about Marilyn Monroe, here she is 6 or 7 years old. Her mother, you know, coming into this world, had extreme mental health issues, could not keep her, was institutionalized. Her father never acknowledged her, even when she became Marilyn Monroe and she went back to try to, you know, make a connection with him. He didn't want anything to do with her. When you look at 11 to 12 foster homes and orphanages that she was, you know, sent to and living at, To think that, you know, one of the stories that that Marilyn had in one of her foster homes is she lived with a vaudeville couple for some time. And, you know, vaudeville, you know, they'd stay up as entertainers all night long. And little Marilyn Monroe, 6 or 7, Norma Jean, would get up with no guidance down Hollywood Boulevard all by herself and watch movies from, you know, from the time in the early in the morning to the last show, sometimes watching the same movie. And she'd look up at the screen and she'd say, my God, there's Jean Harlow. I'm going to be Jean Harlow someday. So her pain fueled her vision. I mean, talk about a visionary. And, you know, from such a fragmented being, physically and sexually abused, completely neglected. You know, at 16, her guardians couldn't keep her. They said they didn't have enough money, so they married her off to her first husband. And, you know, to think about what she created and the image and the character of Marilyn Monroe with such talent, you know, that takes the power of visualization, that she was going to see it. She was going to believe it to see it. And that's a power, a mindset power that a lot of people don't have.
Wow. I didn't know about the first husband, and I guess maybe I wasn't tuned in. I knew that her mom had mental illness and she came from a broken family. I guess I didn't remember the detail of the other homes that she was in and that first marriage. How old was she?
16.
About
16 when she first got married. 16. Yeah, she was 16. Yeah, and you know, it was during the war, and he went off and, you know, left her, so she was really lonely. And she, you know, got a job like most women, had a plant in Van Nuys. I forget the name of it right now, but and, you know, she then became, you know what, I want to be a model, I want to be an actress. And she started her journey, and that was the journey of Marilyn Monroe, becoming Marilyn Monroe. So there's a lot in there that's packed. And, you know, I talk about being authentic. Well, you know, she was authentic. That's what drew people to her. But she was also entrapped by the image she created. And look at how many people are trapped by the image they create. And, you know, they can't get out of it. And the same thing happened with her.
Yes. So she dreamed of being in show business and being a model. And so given her fragmented upbringing and still creating so much success, how do you think she was able to visualize having a better future? And when she was, I'll just for a minute call it daydreaming it, because you talked about her going to the movies a lot and growing up in a part of the time anyway, in a showbiz family. What do you think made that appealing to her? And do you think that she was wishful thinking or really feeling like that's something she could do?
I think she worked hard at her craft. I think a lot of people still think she slept her way to the top, and she was far from it. She was very disciplined. She sang, she acted, she rehearsed. There's a story of Jean Russell saying that on the set of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, she was there before she would arrive, and she was the last one to leave. I mean, it's very Kobe Bryant when you think about, you know, the way that he practiced, and she did too. She was very well rehearsed. She was a perfectionist to some degree. She was very clear, and she had a strong business mind. She was one of the first people, along with Lucille Ball and Mary Pickford, that started her own production company. So Prince and the Showgirl was one of her productions. So when you think about it, she was acutely smart. And most people don't know that about her. They think that, you know, she was this ditzy blonde like her character, you know. So those are some of the things that you just don't know about Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, yeah, she definitely was disciplined, and I think she wanted so much to please and to be
yes.
well at her craft that she worked extra hard. There's probably some personalities that would not. They would just have the expectation and the support, you know.
Well, she was the underdog. I mean, if you think about it. She was
right.
an underdog, and she knew
right.
it. And the thing I want to also say, a lot of people maybe not know this about her, but, you know, think about, we've been talking about Marcus Welby, right? And we're talking about Leave It to Beaver days and Father Knows Best. Back then, you didn't talk about anything that was tragic or challenging. Back then, she was talking about physical abuse. She was talking about sexual abuse. And she was standing up very publicly for civil rights. And so when you think about studio heads, right? She stood up to them. And so one of the stories happened is Daryl Zanuck, who was running Fox at the time. There's a famous picture of Marilyn Monroe and her costume designer and a jazz pianist that actually played at President Kennedy's birthday gala. He was the jazz pianist. His name is Hank Jones, a legendary jazz musician. And they were playing at a club in L.A., and it was at the time what they called Negro Club. Well, Marilyn Monroe and Billy Trevia, her costume designer, went to go see Hank. And guess what? Someone took a snapshot, and it went to Daryl Zanuck's desk. Daryl Zanuck's Jewish. Daryl Zanuck is also doing a movie called Some Like It Hot, which is really basically progressing gender roles, if you really look at that movie. And yet he called her a commodity, and he said, if I ever catch you at one of those clubs again, you're fired. And she said, basically, she says, well, if you fire anybody, I'll be the first in the line because I will not take this. And so she said, he is my friend. The other thing is that Ella Fitzgerald, the story always gets butchered, but she was really one of the main people that got her being able to play in big clubs, not because of race, but it was because of actually she was kind of perceived as more frumpy. And Marilyn made sure that her really, you know, high-profile friends would show up, and Marilyn supported her and loved her as a not only a person but as a singer. And a third story I'll tell you to support this is when she was filming Some Like It Hot, the production manager came to her and said, I'm sorry, your maid, who was African-American at the time, was not allowed in the hotel at all. You couldn't even come through the back door. And she said, if she goes, I go. So guess who stayed? Well, guess what? Marilyn Monroe shot the picture and her maid stayed. So those are the kind of things that I think people don't realize what grit she had and the ability to stand up to studio heads and, you know, even the Me Too movement with Harry Cohn. You know, she walked out on him. You know, I'm not going to sleep with you. I'm not saying that Marilyn didn't sleep with people and she didn't have affairs. She did. She was a dichotomy to some degrees. But she also stood up for what is right. And she wouldn't just sleep her way to the top, like most starlets do.
No. right. Goodness. Yeah, no, she, I always got the idea that she was, I mean, there was a lot of that, you know, that's when they used to talk about the casting couch and all that, I think was back in that era and before. And that was an assumption that was made. But I really do think because she had a lot of different talents, some better than others, you know, but nonetheless, the dancing, the singing, the acting. I really think that she wanted to people please and be accepted and
yes,
went to a lot of
yes.
work that other
very
people
so.
Didn't go to. It kind
very
of lended
so.
Itself to her personality. So, so she worked hard. Why do you think people are so fascinated by her after all these years?
I think it's really what we talked about. I think it's all of it, but I do think it's really her ability to be real and to be authentic. And she's magical. She's now sketched in all of our cultural kind of texture. So I think she's here to stay. If anything, you know, whether you're 6 or 96, you're going to know who she is. And that's the beauty of her. And I think, you know, if there's a legacy for her besides her death and besides that she's a beautiful, wonderful actress, is that she really was a simple girl with a simple dream. And I think all of us could relate to that, whether you're going to be an actress or you're going to, you know, be an accountant. We all have dreams when we're little boys and little girls, and the ability to be able to bring that dream to life and to be magical and to really spread so much real joy. And yet at the same time, she was also a tortured soul. So she's real. The reality is that she's not all rainbows and unicorns. There was a dark, tortured side to her, but let's seek to understand versus judge. And I think if, you know, Marilyn were here today, you know, that would probably be a really good message for her. You know, she used to say something when she would go on to stage or into a movie set when she was scared, and she would say to somebody, hold a good thought. And I think really right now in this world today, we need to hold a good thought, not only for Marilyn since it's her birthday, but let's hold a good thought for each other. And I think, you know, if you really listen to some of the words and interviews that she talked about, you know, I think that's something that she would really encourage all of us to do a little bit more of, is to love each other a little bit more.
I think so too. It seems a lot more difficult these days. People sure seem to have their heels dug in. You know, you brought up the Texas shooting and you know, even before that, the politics over the last several years. You know, people have just been so dug in. I don't know where the... Yeah, I use a sexist. I'll just go ahead and use a sexist example of, you know, it used to be a couple friends, relatives, acquaintances, you know, could go out, have a discussion, come upon a topic where they didn't agree, put their 2 cents worth in on both sides, agreed to disagree, had another beer, talked about the Mets or whatever, on to next topic, and that was kind of the end of it. And then you just really didn't probably discuss that again with that person, but it didn't affect relationships. And something that I've found amazing in this last few years, and social media has amplified it, just watching, you know, even if it's not you, but I've found it be me getting sucked in a couple of times, you know.
Yeah.
You just gotta, my answer has been that I'm staying away from it a lot. You know, I'm shutting off the TV and social media a lot. That had to be my answer, because I didn't really want to engage in that, because you're not going to change anybody's mind who's got their heels dug in one way or another so much. You're just not going to change their mind. So it is just friction, tension, and an argument. And I've seen so many relationships destroyed, even by family members, about things that really, I got to think a decade from now, they're not going to remember anymore. You know, we'll be, I don't know, a couple presidents down the road and wherever we'll be, but whatever they're arguing about today or 4 years ago, you know, is going to be a non-issue, and so many other new issues will have happened that I don't know what happened. Do you have a clue, Nina, what happened, where the shift went from being able to have a discussion and agree to disagree to, you know, now just blah. You know,
I think a lot of it has to do with social media. I think we can stay behind our computer and say things. And I think we've just been over the years been able to allow ourselves to say things that we never would say to each other in our face. So I think that's part of it. But again, it's systemic. So there's a lot of stress. And I think we all want to externalize our stress, externalize our anger, externalize instead of going inside and saying to ourselves, how can I be better today? How can I... We want the world to be better, and yet if we're not better, we're not going to have a world that's better. So you can't change somebody else. You can only change yourself. So how are you going to go inside and start to look at yourself and say, how can I be a better human being? And how can I show up and be a giver versus somebody that just blames? And that's going to be
that's
all
a really
of our
good
lives.
Point. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great point because it is awfully easy to get caught up in these other discussions, which are, you know, and that was something I said the other day, you know, it's become an old adage to me, but, you know, when you point a finger at one, you got three pointed back at you, you know, and I just, it's so easy to get involved in these external things and not tend to your own side of the street. And, you know, there's
yeah.
a lot of people, it's not just these football players I was talking to. It's not just celebrities, you know, COVID and the politics and the war and whatever else, social issues that have come up. You know, there's a lot of depression, you know, and they're talking about, you know, 22 veterans a day committing suicide. Well, you know, the teenage, what was it, 9 to 15 year olds, it's the highest level of child suicide as well. And you take that out of the mix, and I'll bet you if somebody looked up the statistics, suicide overall and addiction, I heard a blurb on some news program the other night that addiction has really gone up, you know,
huge numbers.
It's
and the stress in the workplace, the numbers are beyond epidemic. I mean, if we think COVID has been a killer, well, I will say suicide, addiction, and mental illness is right around the corner. And if we don't get a handle on this, we're going to lose a lot more lives. And it's happening every day. We know somebody who's either died of, you know, just even look at the famous people over the last month or two who have died in suicide. That, again, you know, you've got Naomi Judd, who people would look at her and go, she's got everything. But when you have depression and extreme depression and you have mental illness, you know, it's we're not in somebody else's shoes, but we've got to find ways, particularly, you know, not just for the famous, but for the everyday Joe, that single mom, that single dad that doesn't have the resources, that doesn't have the ability to say, I'm going to take a month or 3 months or a year off. How can we start connecting those dots? Because if we don't start connecting those dots, our families are already falling apart. So how are you going to bring them back to life? We've got to go back to the basics. I always say this to anybody. You know, if you think about when you get out of alignment, you got to go back to the basics, the fundamentals of, you know, how do you nurture your family, you know? And it's not about being more on social media and imitating Kim Kardashian, you know? That's not going to get
exactly.
you anywhere except for a lot of fluff, you know? So.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that was the only thing I got sucked in. Whatever my stance is on guns, you know, not even really relevant, but a comment I read the other day, you know, after the Texas thing, and you've heard them all over, you know, take all the guns away thing. And I said, that's like taking cars away after a hit and run, you know, people are involved in all these things. We've got broken families. We've got too much social media. We've got more isolation, polarization, more teaching divisiveness instead of being united. And, you know, I had a laundry list of things that just came off the top of my head, you know, because well, what I said was I was trying to be diplomatic. I said, I wish it were as simple as just taking away all the guns. And then I did my laundry list of things. And this person that I know, who probably doesn't like me now, chalk it up, who's been a teacher for a long time, said, well, there are a lot of issues out there, Kim, but you have to start somewhere. And again, trying to be diplomatic, and then I left it alone. I don't know if anything else was said. I said, and yes, and home is a great place to start. You know, home is a great place.
I think you're making a good point, Kim, and I think it's we all want answers, so we want to externalize. If we take the guns away, you know, guns are not going to be the complete solutions, because guess what? The people behind those guns are the ones, and if we really want to go back, there was actually evidence 4 months prior that he was going to do what he was going to do. Where is that looking at the evidence from the standpoint of help when this kid was telling the world going to do?
Yes.
And were we listening? I'm saying again, we're posting, but we're not listening to each other. And that's the problem. We're so distracted and we're so overwhelmed. We're having a hard time being able to really digest what's happening. So what do? It's easier to get mad at something versus then to say, okay, how are we going to roll up our sleeves and solve this community, solve this family, solve this world? How are we going to do these things? You can't do it by blame. It'll never, ever, ever get solved.
Well, and part of the issue with that, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I've had some issues in my life and been around a couple 24 hours. And, you know, it's so much easier to expect someone else to fix it for you, or to think that, you know, just having the government take away the guns is going to fix the problem. Well, that is a lot easier than doing the work yourself. You know, watching your kid on social media, not giving them a phone when they're two, you know, letting them be on TikTok doing challenges. You know, I did a whole show on, I've never gone on TikTok, but just because one is overwhelming for me too, Facebook and LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And I miss the ones before that, and I don't care about the ones after that. And I got on them in the first place to promote. I understood, and you'll understand me when I say this, that was the 21st century way of promoting, you know. And so I've been doing my show for 12 years, and so I needed to join a couple of those things to promote, you know, and to look for guests and things like that. I didn't join for the reasons that a lot of other people did. Mine was strictly because they don't give away road atlases and have reply cards anymore. And so
funny.
I understood that this is what, you know, what we had to do. But, you know, I was, because, you know, a lot of the people listening have had brain injuries, including myself. Somebody brought to my attention this thing on TikTok called the TikTok challenges. And I looked, and without any trouble at all, and I could have done a lot more studying, but it proved the point to do the show. There were 23 of those challenges that have killed kids and, you know, caused brain injuries or permanent disability, or actually killed people. And the thing that bothered me even more than that, and you guys can tune into that show, I'm going to shut up about it, but the thing that bothered me even more than that, there were so many layers of that besides just that, but is looking at the comments and the people being groomed to think that that was funny, and the people making comments thinking that that was funny, like it was acceptable. I mean, I was appalled, you know, that something like that is even allowed, you know, and encouraged, and that people, and then I thought those comments, I really paid a little more attention because I thought it had to be all kids making those comments, and it wasn't. It was people that were the age of being their parents that thought that was funny. And I just thought, wow, we got a lot of work to do. And it's work. And it is a lot easier to think, to point your finger and want somebody else to solve the problem or to oversimplify, you know, what's going to solve the problem in the way that is being bantered about right now. It really has to do with taking it home and doing your own homework. This isn't something that can be fixed by the government, for God's sake. We don't want that.
No.
They got to fix themselves, too. You know, they got to go home and fix themselves like everybody else.
Yeah.
Not in a position to fix all the rest of us right now. You know, there's just a lot of brokenness. And so I would hope, too, that there could be, as you said, you know, for Marilyn's birthday, I think that's a point well taken about the good thought and to try, because I don't think anybody likes the stuff that's going on. And, you know, when you come right down to it, there's been more suicides and addictions than there have been mass shootings. I'm not saying that that makes one okay. I'm just saying that the atmosphere, the numbers of suicides and overdoses and self-medicating substance abuse problems by far outnumber these other things, and they're contributory factors to these other things. So, you know, it's hard work to deal with mental illness and with substance abuse. And it would be nice to think that just taking away weapons would fix it, but it's not. It's what's driving those addictions and feelings that make people give up so young.
It's much more systemic and it's complex, and I think that we just want to pick and say that's the answer. We live in a quick fix society, and we have for quite some time. And so I think for a lot of us, you know, I'm in the transformational space, so I have a quote that I use: in order to speed up, you got to learn how to slow down. And we're going to have to learn how to slow down and really be more present to our lives. And that means not doing another social media thing or going with this other person. I think you have to really decide where your priorities are. When I first started in corporate America, you know, there wasn't social media, there wasn't cell phones, there wasn't the internet. So you had a lot more natural downtime just by the nature of that you couldn't talk to that person until the next day, right? So now what's happening is that we are getting up and we're starting our days. And if I'm, let's say, a mother with two small kids, I'm starting my day and, you know, I'm getting little Johnny and Susie off to school. And when it was, you know, lockdowns with COVID, we were in homeschooling, which a whole nother stress. Then you got mom and dad trying to do all these things. And if you are a single mom trying to do all this stuff, you come home, you try to, you know, fix dinner, you get your children's homework done, all that stuff. And guess what? If I have to work, then I'm going to go back on my email until 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to start it all over again. We become robotic to our lives. And we're going to have to really shift that in our society by really going back to some of our priorities. And, you know, it's fun to have all possibilities with social media and the world, and we're all connected, but we're going to have to learn how to manage our energy and manage ourselves and manage our lives. If not, we're going to have more and more addiction, we're going to have more and more mental illness, and we're going to have a lot more anxiety. So it's a lot.
I agree. And I'm going to drop back to Marilyn, but I agree with you completely, and that's kind of what I was saying about what I'm doing, because I was just finding, my Nana used to have a saying like yours, the faster I go, the behinder I get. And I was trying to think of exactly how she said it, but I think that was it or the gist of it. And that's true, because, you know, I start by my day by doing email and answering the Facebook stuff. And my husband and I went on an anniversary trip, and I came home and there were 5,700 emails and social media messages and stuff, and I was overwhelmed. I mean, think about it. When you come back from vacation, just doing the laundry and, you know, picking up the house and unpacking and stuff like that is stressful enough from that relaxation you just had. But then you look at that and I just, you know, I got up and pushed myself away and I just said, you know what? Some of this stuff is going to wait. And, you know, I've noticed, you know, people have asked me, I've never had notifiers on any social media, and I'm not present there all the time. You know, I'll check in. I was checking in once a day, but it's even got to the point where, you know, I go a few days and not do that. And you're right. Mm-hmm. I was a financial consultant for 25 years, and, you know, you remember the old, I think they were yellow for a while and then pink, the while you were out pads, and your assistant would take your messages. And, you know, the slower part of that, and I thought I was in a fast-paced business back then, but it was, you know, that I got to drive, think while I was driving, give my entire attention to my client, without any fear of interruption from pings and stuff, you know, on my phone, give them all my attention, come back and get my messages and go through those, and then give all my attention, you know, like a saying I use now, you know, be where my hands are, instead of the buckshot thinking, you know, hamster wheel thinking all over the place. And the only way I can do that is by stopping doing as much of some of this other stuff, learning to budget. Another thing we talk about here on Brain Injury Radio is we wake up every morning with a certain amount of brain bucks.
Yeah.
And
that's good.
Our wallet isn't completely full after we've had a brain injury anyway. And so, you know, if we tried to do life the same way that we were doing before, you know, we're going to be out of brain bucks by noon. You know, and so you really have to learn to, and that's a good lesson for us here to carry out, you know, to the rest of the community, is that, you know, there's got to be a come to Jesus moment, you know, where we reprioritize.
Yeah.
We all got caught up with the tide of how society was changing without realizing that we can put limits and boundaries on that to keep ourselves healthy. Just because social media had an agenda and took off and we all got swept up in it at some point, you know, you know, we don't turn our will over to Zuckerberg, you know, or Fox or CNN or whoever, you know, really just need to take more time. And I think you're absolutely right about slowing down. But when it comes to the drugs, I'm really loving our interview and the conversation, but I really loved the fact that it was Marilyn's birthday and we're doing the interview on this. So I'm going to drop back for a minute while we're talking about drugs. What kind of alcohol and drugs was Marilyn addicted to in her life, and why the importance in the series talking about, you spend a lot of time educating people around mental illness and addiction. So why is it important to the series, and what kind of alcohol and drugs was Marilyn addicted to in her life?
Well, here's the answer. This is, and I'd love to be able to clarify for the audience. Even though you see Marilyn drinking, you know, she'll have a champagne. She loves champagne. She really wasn't a huge drinker, and most people don't know that. They think that she was addicted to alcohol, and she really wasn't. What she was addicted to was prescription drugs. And the challenge that she had is she had a very hard time sleeping. And so, and she had suicidal thoughts. I mean, there was a lot of things, but I'm going to give the audience some perspective. 3 months before she died, her doctors prescribed 900 pills. 700 of them were sleeping pills. No doctor should be prescribing anybody 900 pills. It was one doctor, so it wasn't like she was doctor shopping. And so when you think about the heavy barbiturates back then, unfortunately, that's what was being prescribed. You just shouldn't have had those types of drugs in her systems. And even though there was not a diagnosis for borderline personality at that time, bipolar, she was diagnosed as bipolar, she probably would have been diagnosed as borderline personality. And the difference between, a lot of people don't know the difference between a borderline personality and a bipolar. And I'm not a doctor, so I'm just going to give it to you in layman's terms, which is basically bipolar is a lot through brain chemistry, and borderline personality is through trauma, childhood trauma. And so you start to disassociate. And so when you start to look at how Marilyn was treated back then, particularly with borderline personality and bipolar, those drugs actually had the opposite effect. So when you think about Marilyn, the last day that she died, she slept all night, she didn't eat, and she's taking a huge amount of prescription drugs on an empty stomach. And with bipolar and mixed episodes, and she would have these mixed episodes where she'd be extremely happy 1 minute and then not the other, is they have mixed episodes are one of those times where people do have suicidal thoughts. And I was under the assumption that when somebody was going to commit suicide, they would actually write a note. Well, that's actually doesn't happen. That's actually more rare than a normality. And most people, particularly in that state, mixed episode state, could actually take their life, particularly in prescription drugs, within 5 minutes of the, 5 minutes before not even thinking that. So think about the realities of how Marilyn's personality actually unfolded towards the end of her life. You know, a year and a half prior, she was institutionalized herself. Our opening episode and the dramatic episode really takes the audience through that. It's devastating and humanizes her. She was locked up in a cell. She was in a white jacket. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that she went through being Marilyn Monroe, and most people want to just put her in a box and say she was happy or she was tragic. No, she was human. She's human like all of us. You might not have the Marilyn Monroe struggle, but everybody has a struggle. There are people, your listeners, that are listening that have brain injuries. They've had struggle. They've had challenge. They've had to overcome, and not any, less than Marilyn, having to overcome that. And we have the choice. There's that beautiful quote from Shawshank Redemption that says, you're going to get busy living or you're going to get busy dying. And some of us can actually transform that, and some of us can't. And the ones that can't, you know what, at least if you could try, and I think that's the key, and to reach out for help, because there is help there, it's just finding the right help.
Right, and again, I won't say that some people don't need medication, but a lot of, because I'm not a doctor too, so I'll put that disclaimer in, but support and being able to be honest with people about what's going on and not trying to medicate a lot of it away. You know, sometimes, I don't know, there have been times in my life where I thought, when you were taught to buck up, I think men even more so, but a lot of women in their own for their own reasons, had a never let them see you sweat kind of a mentality. And so, I don't know if you thought that if you started to cry and really let loose that you would never stop, or what the fear is, the shame, the guilt, all of the things that are really wasted emotions, because they just, it's the shovel, sitting there while you're digging the hole, you know, if you can be honest and talk with someone about what you're feeling, there are people who are willing to listen to that. And you'd be surprised at how what I call dumping the emotional trash can do as much, if not more, if you do it consistently once the wastebasket is dumped of all the trash from the past, and you then keep an inventory going regularly so the trash doesn't get that full again. At how helpful that is, because a pill masks the feelings and doesn't give you the tools to be able to go in. And again, it's work, you know, it's not an easy fix. It takes a lot of work and dedication and desire and willingness to let go of old ideas and old ways and be willing to share things that you would be embarrassed or feel ashamed to share with someone. But if you can do that, if you can become willing to do that, I've just seen a miraculous change in myself and a lot of other people just by doing some emotional housekeeping. And one of them is that you've got to stop long enough to become aware. I talk about those four A's of recovery. Sometimes, as you alluded to, we're going so fast and we're on a rote path that we're not even aware of the self-destructive cycle that we're in. And so awareness is a huge thing. And then acceptance that, you know, not only am I aware of it, okay, you know, I said, yes, all right, so I'm aware. But accepting the detrimental aspects of what it's doing to your life, accepting that it is a problem and it's going to lead you to a really dark place, digging a hole is going to be really hard to climb out of. And at that point, making a commitment to take action, which is
very much
a lot of times action opposite emotion, positive action, harder action than just taking a pill or locking ourselves in the house with our head under the covers. That just defers the reality that we're struggling with. Instead of, we can't go around it, we've got to go through it. And that's not an easy thing, but it is a lot easier than living in perpetual darkness and self-torture every day. And then when we learn those tools, after we've taken the action and we learn tools, and we do that by talking to people who've been down that road before and finding strong support groups and not relying on one person or one drug or set of drugs or whatever to fix us. You know, here, fix me. You know, just like with the other topic, it's never that easy. You know, we've got to be a participant in our own recovery from anything. Here, you know, in brain injury land, we have to participate in our own recovery, or it becomes easy to become angry, depressed, full of anxiety, bitter, and then hate those feelings so bad that we want to self-medicate them away, which leads you to a dark place that perhaps you don't come back from. So if you want to believe that you're here for a reason and that you can have a hand in making your life happy, joyous, and free, then there are certain things that you have to do to help make that happen. And, you know, I think a support group is one of them. And so with these sleep issues and things, I don't know. You know, there probably was. It was later, though. I think it probably came in the 60s and not when she needed it. But, you know, things now like mindfulness and meditation,
yeah,
and slowing down, doing things like
she
yoga.
Would have been into, she would have been into that, too. She already was. She was into yoga. She was into metaphysics. She was seeker. She was a seeker, you know. She was a deep soul. And a lot of people, you know, she wrote from a very deep place. She was not surfacey. And most people, you know, if you listen to those or read those tabloids, I mean, they say, oh, the Red Diary. First of all, the Red Diary, just for most people, they go, where's her Red Diary? The Red Diary was a book of poems that a guy named Ted, I'm trying to think what his last name was. He was a struggling actor, and he made up that story in order to get more fame. And he came out and said, look, they were just a book of poems. So the Red Diary is really just a book of poems that she had. So, you know, when you think about her and life, I would just, you know, say to your audience, is this is for all of us, is, you know, don't be so quick just to believe something because you heard it on CNN or Fox or any of these other channels, or you see it in your web browser. We all do it, you know, and we think because somebody's authoritative, even me, I'm question me, you know, go back and find out for yourself. But some of these things that people are saying, they come across so real that you think they're true. And the reality is that if you dig a little deeper, you might find that it's not a fact. It's either a theory that somebody made up, or it's a outright outlandish rumor. And that's not just in the Marilyn story, but other people's stories as well that we're living out today.
Well, you're right. As it gets past along, how a little more embellishment, and it becomes the truth. So how can we take Marilyn's life and learn from it? Are there teachable moments that you can point to for people to be aware of?
Well, I think there are a lot of, you know, I used to market movies for a living. And so now what I'm doing is, instead of a movie, I'm talking about a celebrity. And this celebrity is very multidimensional. And so there's a lot of things to do if you want to create a better life. One of them is to make sure you don't stop dreaming. As little girls, little boys, we all have a dream. And, you know, don't lose sight of that dream, because we can always recreate ourselves. I have an 85-year-old client that jumps out of planes and says, I'm recreating myself, right, at 85, you know, and I have 27-year-olds that don't want to take a move without thinking, are they doing it right? I say, go live life, you know, be authentically you, because, you know, the realness of her is what brought people to her, and the magic of Marilyn is what she lights up on a screen, but it's that authentic little girl with a simple dream. And the other thing is, you know, she, you know, even going into the Happy Birthday Gala, she was given a book, you know, the child's book from The Little Engine That Could, I Think I Can, I Think I Can. And she brought that book with her to the Happy Birthday Gala event. And she needed that resilience, and she needed that mindset that says, yes, I can. And you said something tonight that I thought was really good. You can have all of this stuff, and yet if you don't roll up your sleeves and do, nothing's going to happen. If you want something different, you're going to have to do something different. And this is the thing that we're going to all have to do. You can't just mindset your way to a new life. You're going to have to take action into a new life. And I think the last thing that I'd want people to know is that look at this beautiful soul named Marilyn Monroe and look at all that she's achieved, even with her mental health issues. So you too, if you are struggling with addiction and or mental health issues, just because she didn't overcome it doesn't mean you can't. So bring in the magic of Marilyn within yourself and get out there and never stop dreaming. And the other thing I'd like us to do is for ourselves, Marilyn Monroe, and this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do appreciate you distinguishing between bipolar, which we used to call manic depressive. If they'd quit changing the names, that makes it even more difficult. But
yes.
Now known as bipolar and borderline personality disorder, I appreciate you distinguishing that. And then we've talked about even though there are so many more tools and resources now than there were back in 1962, why we think mental illness and addiction are at an all-time high, I think we've talked to that, but spoken to that, but just to kind of cap that off, there are so many busy, I mean, now we've got inflation, people talking about, my cousin didn't realize it was Wednesday night and told me she spent, I don't know where, I guess I don't know where you're from, but she just paid $96 to fill up her gas tank, I guess.
Yeah,
she
I'm in California.
California.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yes, I did too, so I'm right there with her. Yeah.
And so
pretty
the inflation, the groceries, I mean, it just, we've gone from, it's been brutal, you know, from the elections to COVID to the war to now inflate. It's one thing after another, after another, after another. And then we have this social media and media that, you know, that was another thing that was nice back when we were growing up, that it, I don't know, whenever it was midnight, that a test pattern came on, you know, and that there were only three channels, you know, and back then, you know, that I'm not romanticizing a memory, but that they actually reported news, you know, and didn't interject as much bias. They just told you what was going on. Certainly not to the extent now that they do 24/7 on so many different channels. And I think, you know, and then I'll let you cap off that one. But I think taking the reins back into our own hands and drawing healthy boundaries for ourselves, becoming aware that the boundaries got smeared somewhere, that none of us are Superman or Wonder Woman or whatever, able to do all of these things endlessly all of the time without stopping and taking a breather. We kind of need to do a self-check from time to time and maybe let some things go or not do them as frequently for as long and make some changes and build in time, make an appointment with yourself for self-care. So half of that time that you're spending on social media, get away from the social media, shut it down. And if you feel a tug, I've talked about this before, and we don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to leave it at, they put a lot of money into making social media addictive. And so if you're a person that has a predilection toward addiction, then social media is going to grab you just like alcohol, drugs, or anything else that is addictive. They spent a ton making it addictive. So to become aware of that, that, you know, I gave people a challenge before, and I think Marilyn's birthday is another good time to give people a challenge. You know, starting tomorrow, or make a date if that's easier for you, in the next week, not a month from now, but just say, I'm not going to go on social media for 48 hours and see how you feel. If you immediately feel relieved and like a burden has been lifted from you, then that's good. You'll probably be able to, you know, do what I've done and make that a habit of staying away for periods of time, or just checking in and then not staying on like they want me to do, and never buy anything through social media platforms. Go directly to the vendors. You know, just don't do it. But in any case, if instead you don't find yourself relieved, if you feel tension and you're snapping at people in your family, or you're showing maybe you can't sleep that night. Maybe your mind is whizzing too fast. You know, then you're showing withdrawal symptoms from the social media. And then you really have to look at that. That means that it's a problem. And you think, well, you know, I can see how alcohol or drugs can be damaging. How could social media possibly be damaging? Well, it erodes real life relationships. It gets in the way of socialization and other things that you want. It takes time. For one thing, it takes a big chunk of time that there's a lot of other things you probably could, should, or would rather be doing, but you suddenly don't have the time because you've been there so much. And so, again, those self-checks, I think we have a lot more tools, but people aren't using them because of the distractions that are made to be addictive and to pull us away from all of the tools and resources that are out there now that weren't in 1962, because that's not what they're talking about on social media, in the news, where most of us are trapped. Do you have anything else on that?
Oh, I think that's important, and I think you've said it all. I just think that, you know, here's a clear indication. So I was quoted in the New York Post around Kim Kardashian wearing Marilyn Monroe's happy birthday dress. I will tell your audience what I said, which is I don't think anybody should be wearing that dress except for Marilyn Monroe. But what I am going to say, and I have nothing against Kim Kardashian, but my thing is, you know, let Kim Kardashian be Kim Kardashian. Let Marilyn Monroe be Marilyn Monroe. The challenge that we have is, guess what? That post got more likes than the good, wholesome stuff that you're talking about. We're going to have to change our values in which we value. So if I value that I need to be Kim Kardashian and I'm going to give that energy, that's where we value. We can say we value education and our families and all this stuff that we say that we value, but if we don't back it up with action, we're just, it's going to fall flat. And the same thing, as I said, we got to go back to the basics of who we are as a society, as families. We've got to pay attention to our own backyard. I can't change you. You can't change me. I can't change the president or the presidents that are going to be in the future. I can only change myself. And if myself means I'm going to be on a mission to change the world, then that's what I'm going to do. My mission is to be the best mom. That's what I'm going to do. Show up as your best self. And if you find yourself being distracted, like you just said, in social media and feeling antsy and feeling anxious, you might have an addiction. We all do. We are addicted to drama. That's why reality shows are so popular. They're not even reality shows. They're drama shows. They're just a different, you know, instead of As the World Turns, it's The Real Housewives, you know, and we're just addicted to a
different reality.
Drama. But it's scripted reality, and it's a drama, you know, and part of it, you know, I love this. I'm not saying don't ever watch those things. All I'm saying is, guess what? We have to put it into balance. A little pinch of salt, a little pinch of sugar in a cake is great. But if you put 2 cups of, you know, or 15 cups of sugar into a cake, it ain't going to taste very good when you put it out of take it out of the oven. We're taking too much sugar in, not just physically, but emotionally and mentally and spiritually. We're not feeding our souls with things that are good, and we need to start doing that, or we're not going to feel better.
Exactly. And in, you mentioned Marilyn is the ultimate dreamer, and what did you mean by that? We've alluded to it, but it's a good place to be.
Well,
ending,
I mean,
the
she
show.
Was a very, yeah, she was the ultimate dreamer. I mean, she manifested a vision of herself, and she was able to create it from very fragmented beginnings. And if you think about it, one of the stories with, you know, Clark Gable being her father, if you think about it, 6 decades or you know, later, but when she was 1954, dancing with Clark Gable. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. That was her idol on screen, 6 or 7 years old. Could you imagine dancing with your idol that you thought was your father or you wanted him to be? He was the king of Hollywood. If you Google that, you'll be able to see those the Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe dancing. I mean, that's manifestation at its best. She dreams the hardest, one of the hardest. And if you dream, you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza has a beautiful quote that I use all the time. The best way to create your future, or the best way to predict your future, is to create it. You've got to create it. You've got to believe it to see it, not see it to believe it. And if you're waiting for something to happen, you're going to be waiting a long time.
I appreciate that. It's interesting that you said that about reality shows. I've never watched one, and I think one of the first times one of those came up, I don't even know what it was, but I said to my husband, gosh, this is supposed to be for entertainment. I can see reality anywhere. To me, that's not entertaining, you know. So I've just never watched those. I guess I more watch escapism shows than scripted reality. There's a lot of scripted reality going on in reality. To me, that's just more of the same, you know, not interested, I guess. And, you know, you said you didn't have anything against Kim Kardashian. I don't know that I do, except just the jaw-dropping, scratching my head. You know, how does a rich girl that didn't have any particular talent go as far as she's gone? I mean, what, her dad was one of the attorneys in the O.J. Simpson trial, so somehow the name got known a long time ago, and now these girls have become so famous and such role models, and I guess I haven't watched them enough to see why that would be. But I do know that that's a reality for a lot of people out there. I just, you know, again, I just haven't watched it. I make no comparison at all, but in my life, you know, after I wrote a book about my aneurysm, we have a resident owl. It's a little tiny screech owl. It's really cute, who's come back 4 years in a row to our house from September to spring. And then he must go find his wife and do the family thing during the summer and then come back to our place 4 years in a row. And after the second year, I wrote a book about the exchanges that this owl and I have. And COVID was going on, so a lot of people were, having the stressors of the lockdowns and all of that kind of thing. And I have to say, during that time, and the owl was the conduit, Hootie was the conduit. But the whole point of that book, aside from telling an uplifting reality story, is that it's in your own backyard, Dorothy, a lot of the time, you know, the joy, the simplicity, the pleasure, the redefinition, the what makes you happy isn't through someone else. It's in your own backyard. It's through your eyes, looking around at things that bring you pleasure and not filtering it through what somebody else says is supposed to be pleasurable. It started with the owl, and then so many other things in the backyard came to life for me. Whether it was laying in the grass and looking up at the clouds and doing the ink blot to deal with the clouds, you know, what they look like, but just things that brought very simple pleasures and simple feeling good that had nothing to do with what anyone else was doing, you know. And then I wrote it down partially for my own memory, because I had posted things and remembered things, but they were scattered, and I wanted to put them all together in one place. And so that was the impetus for that. But there were a lot of big lessons and simple things for me. And you know, we did get to a point where being an adrenaline junkie and expectations of what makes you happy were something expensive, something bodacious, audacious. And it's really not. I find the things that make me the happiest are the simplest pleasures that aren't that hard to achieve if I allow myself the time to do that. So in any case, I think Marilyn, in her own way, that, you know, and my last question is just, how do you feel her legacy should be remembered? And I think that, you know, to the best of her ability, you know, she was trying for To Thine Own Self, but she had a lot of challenges going against her, the drugs, the propping up of all the people that tried to manipulate her, as a lot of celebrities do, as a lot of people do, you know, in different circumstances. So she had so much to overcome, but within that accomplished so much. And I'll let you finish that sentence.
You know, she did accomplish a lot in her 36 years here on Earth. And I think that, you know, she would be in awe, I think, because I don't think she realized how loved she was. She felt very alone most of the time. And, you know, that's a hard thing for all of us. There's somebody listening to the show right now that probably feels that aloneness. And when you think about really how much she was loved and adored, and when you think about who she was, she wanted to be that great actress. And I think she'd want to be remembered for that, because that's who she was on the big stage. But I go back to that simple message. She's a little girl named Norma Jean with a very big dream. Simple little girl, but she wanted to belong. She wanted to be loved and to love and to be accepted, like all of us do. And I think if we could go back to love and light and bringing more light, the lightness of that back into our lives, I think then her legacy is for something more than just a tragedy, but is really taking something and transforming it to something that could be more beautiful. And what a wonderful remembrance of somebody that was so magical and human and raw and real and all of it mixed into one. And I think that sums about just all of us that has lived life a little bit and has been in the ups and downs of it. If you can be human and know that you're not a human doing, but you're a human being, then I think you've made your print on this world, and being a better human being will help not only Marilyn's legacy, but help your own life. And I think that would make her probably smile.
I think so too. Well, again, my guest tonight has been Nina Bosky, and check out her website at lifebitesglobal.com. Happy birthday to Marilyn Monroe, and check out the website beyondtheicon.com. And
behind the icon. It's behind, behind the icon. So not beyond, but behind.
Sorry. Must be getting late. Behind the icon. I need my glasses checked.
There you go.
BehindTheIcon.com, and enjoy the docudramas. Keep track of these podcasts and listen to them. It's a fascinating project and story. I envy you. This is very cool. But most of all, I'm very honored and really appreciate you being on tonight on the show and sharing your experience with this project, and have it be on Marilyn's birthday. That's super special. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, good night, and I'll be watching as things unfold.
Oh, thank you so much. And you have a beautiful evening yourself, and just let us know when it's ready. Is it already aired? Is it aired tonight? If we can get a link to it,
yes,
that'd be great.
Within about an hour, the one that I sent
okay.
you, that link is good for both the live and the on-demand show.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Kim. Have a beautiful rest of your evening. Bye-bye.
You too. Good night, Nina. Bye-bye. Okay, everyone. Again, that was Nina Bosky, and I encourage you to check out her mini-series or podcasts. Again, there's 9 in the first series, 9 in the second, and more coming down the road. A lot of lessons to be learned from this icon, Marilyn Monroe. Why we're talking about it on Brain Injury Radio is a personal interest, a human interest story, but also last month was Mental Illness Awareness Month. We've seen a lot of stories about the explosion in addiction going on right now, and there's a lot of lessons that can be taken from this woman, Marilyn Monroe. Again, her birthday today, June 1st, and coming up in August will be the 60th anniversary of her death. That's a long time. A lot of the same problems going on today. But if you don't lose that innocence and sense of wonder, there's always going to be challenges. But if you can keep that sense of wonder, that vulnerability, I think you can find happiness and help and support if you ask for it, and lead a better life. So with that, good night and God bless everyone. I want to thank you for being here tonight. On The R Insane, our sponsor, TBI Survivor Network, and as you know, Craig has the band, had the band, The, T-A-G-E, R, the letter R, Insane, TheRInsane.com. I encourage you to go there now, free downloads of everything, and all the music is going to be taken down. The band is over after 15 years when an integral member of the band, Curly, passed away from COVID. And so they had just gotten done with a 3-record set, have got 15 years worth of work. The tours were canceled because of COVID, and then he passed away. So Craig is now, right now, has VRInsane.com, the music up, that they, the body of work they've done over the last 15 years, a lot of it for free download, and when it's taken down, it's going to be gone forever. So I encourage you to go there and do that. And I'm going to close tonight with Hannah Kerr, because in her own way, Marilyn was a warrior, and that's what we all need to be to get by in this world, is a warrior. This is, again, Hannah Kerr. You can find her at hannahkerrmusic.com. Good night, and I'll see you next week.